Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza.
Good morning.
Hey, you two.
Hello there.
We are your primary selection team here at Cattle, and hope everybody's doing okay.
Yeah.
It's not warm, but it's nice out.
Yes, it's wonderful.
It's gotten warmer.
Yeah.
A little bit.
It's getting there. It's going to get more. I was looking ahead. It should be getting better soon.
60s coming.
I'm ready for that very much. Too. We've got one big topic to talk about today. And so we're excited for the Return of the Cattle Summer Reading Challenge.
Yes.
Which, as you might have heard, it's a huge part of Mari's job.
Yeah.
And we're going to jump right off with letting her tell us about this year's program.
Okay. Well, we have been for many years using a website called cattle.beanstack.org. And then there's a /summer. You can actually find the link also right on our website today. But it's a website that kind of manages our participants in the Summer Reading Challenge. There is a challenge for everyone. And I do mean everyone. I'm talking about the baby who was just born last month. Right on up to adults. There's babies and toddlers. There's a kids challenge. There's a teen reading challenge. And as I mentioned, also adults. And, you know, you basically you just decide when you get on the website, you know, which challenge you want to sign up for. If you're kind of a kid or a teen right on that, you know, age cutoff, you get to choose whether you want to do the children's one or the teen one. But it's a really fun way just to keep track all summer of your reading time. But also there are activities that you can do. You know, one of our activities is to go out and, you know, do some squirrel hunting. Our theme this year, tails and tails. So tails, mostly pointing to animal tails. I mean, we're really celebrating a lot of animal stories all summer long. Our reading lists really reflect that. But then also just, you know, unusual tales, you know, retellings of folk tales or special stories. You're also going to find those types of books on our list. And I want to mention that you can sign up for the challenge today, but it does not start until June 1st. It ends August 7th. And as usual, we do have lots of great prizes. I mean, we've got Meijer gift cards for drawing prizes for children who complete the summer reading challenge. We also have grand prizes like the Potter Park Zoo family membership. We've got the Impression 5 Science Center family membership will also be a drawing prize. Hmm. Teens, oh my goodness, there's a high... I think it's called High Caliber. Let me see if I say this right. High Caliber Karting Entertainment. I've always wanted to do that. So I hope that there will be whoever wins really enjoys that type of a prize to share with friends. But it's just a really fun way to connect the whole family with reading habits. And then also just, you know, doing reading reading things that really appeal to you, that you really, you know, are drawn to. We use the Collaborative Summer Library Program. It's a program that's really kind of sponsored across the country. And the Library of Michigan helps us manage, you know, tap into that service so that we can use the art and a lot of activities. But what they say is that the summer reading program or challenge, that was what we call it, it really empowers people of all ages and abilities to, you know, read by developing a positive attitude about reading. I mean, for me personally, I really want to motivate school-age children to keep reading, you know, during their summer vacation. These are not been usual times, as we know.
No.
And it's so important to just keep reading. We try our best to really cooperate and collaborate with some of our community partners in town. So you'll find, you know, Impression 5 experiments. We really want to challenge our readers to try new literary genres if you've never read a mystery before or historical fiction, or even if you just don't do nonfiction. I have a lot of great nonfiction on my list. But I also want to mention that this is a challenge for everyone, not just the kids who are super readers. I'm reaching out to reluctant readers. I really want to encourage children and adults who maybe don't consider themselves a reader to look for stuff that really appeals to you. Because I'm a big believer in, you know, read what appeals to you.
So, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I remember working in the branch, both branches that I worked at, Holt and Mason, just saying it's really a time to celebrate reading. Remember when we added the adult program and you got some funny looks in the beginning, like, oh, I thought that was just for kids. And it's like, no, this is time to sort of celebrate reading in our lives and to encourage. It can be fun for adults to have those incentives to track your reading as well.
Yeah.
I know that for me, being a really heavy reader, I often feel like I even read the best during the summer reading program because I am tracking it and there's that mindfulness piece to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really fun. And it's just a way for us to, as a community, you know, through our libraries and our community, celebrate reading. Yeah. It's always exciting for me as a parent to have it come back because it does give that extra boost to my 9-year-old daughter who does enjoy reading, but there's so much going on competing for children's attention, especially in this challenging year. And for us as adults too.
Very much.
Right.
You know, we're all a bit distracted by so many things right now.
There's the parenting part of just modeling for kids.
Oh, I mean,
seeing you read is really a big deal.
Yeah, even if it's a short time, you know, you're spending time 15, 20 minutes doing your, you know, newspaper reading.
Exactly. Magazine.
And magazine.
It, whatever it's reading, it's still reading.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something that really leaves an impression.
And, you know, for the non-parents out there, you never know who's watching.
Just go
out there and enjoy your reading, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, have a fun challenge with also fun little prizes. And
Yeah. And we do have fun prizes. I mean, kids are, the treasure chest is back.
We
have some little tiny toys, teens. I mean, we've got a very special cup for you that changes colors when you put a cold drink inside. I mean, just lots of great tchotchkes. I'm always excited to find new and interesting prizes for our members. And if that doesn't appeal to you, that's fine. Like sometimes I don't even pick up my prizes. But we've got gift cards all summer long, special toys. I mean, you know, larger, bigger valued toys sometimes, you know, for our early literacy, babies and toddlers, we want to give some of those away too. So
excellent.
So it's a fun, if nothing else, it's a fun challenge, you know, just to, you know, see how you read.
And it's fun to look back, like, you know, what did you put in your profile this summer? What kind of books did you read? What did you write? I mean, I love the review feature because you can like write, you know, whether you really liked it or whether you really didn't. it's kind of a neat feature. You do get points for writing your reviews and your peers can see the reviews too.
Yeah. And children can do that too, which is really fun because I feel like they love to, some children, maybe not all, but many really enjoy that, you know, making their mark, being able to say what they want to say about something. It's sort of empowering. And that's a really fun feature that isn't just for adults, that children can write a review after they write a book.
Right.
It's another incentive, I think, for them to, make their stamp, make their mark on something.
Yeah.
I think there's another thing that it's come up in discussion between us, and I've told you it's come up and out in the world. I'm hearing, you know, and having this discussion, and that's that it'll hit people different ways, but I'm a firm believer that if you don't like it, you can stop and find a new book. It might not mean you never read the book. It might mean you're just putting it down for a little while until the time is right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's, you know, summer's going to fly by. You only have so much time.
Right.
Find some stuff you enjoy in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's
enjoy reading.
It's challenging a little bit right now for all ages, but for families without some of the ways that we browse the library visually. And so that can make it a little bit more challenging, but just to make sure that kids find something they like. I remember working in the library and some kids love those books that are a lot of pictures with captions, you know, it's nonfiction for kids, that sort of thing. And parents would be concerned about, you know, I don't know, maybe she's reading a novel or children's novel. No, not necessarily. If the Star Wars cross sections books is the one they want, then go for it. You know, keep that excitement there so it doesn't feel so compulsory. But like Jessica said, just having that reading culture where books are around, books are part of life, books are important. Yeah. Because you really can't control that outcome of how anybody's going to take to reading, but to foster that you know, book rich or literature rich environment is really, I think the key.
There are definitely correlations between, you know, the books that you have on your shelf. Like, even if they don't belong to you, maybe they belong to the library or your school. That is really going to influence, you know, your progression as a student and just how you view the world, how you think, and, you know, eventually what you're like when you grow up. So I definitely think put those books on your bookshelf, spend some time with them. And like Jessica said, if it's not for you, give it back. Move on to something else.
I'd also say, let us help. If there's, you know, there's our grab and go service or our books loose service, or give us a call. I mean, we really do want to help find things. I mean, we understand really well that the lack of browsing is really hard. Yeah. But we would love to try and help.
And you can browse all of our new books and on order books on our website. And I don't know that everybody knows that. So whenever I get a chance to put that out there, you can place holds right from those lists.
Yeah.
Which is really fun. And it's not just, you know, new release type materials that you think of. You can go into all other categories too and look at different, not just the best sellers.
We'll get the links for that actually in the show notes as well.
Okay.
But we have, what do you think, books?
Yeah, I have actually a lot of books. I
know you do.
I hope I get to all of them, but I'm going to start out. Most of mine are actually nonfiction. As I mentioned, that they our theme this year is tales and tales. So a lot of my books are animal focused. And the first book I have is What Do You Do If You Work at the Zoo? I love the play on words here. And that's by Steve Jenkins and Robin Page. They are a author, illustrator, married duo. They are very prolific in what they put out. Really great stuff. I would say the next couple, two to three books are really like for kids up to maybe age three or grade three or grade four. I mean, it's that easy of a nonfiction book, but it's like a picture book, and it just goes through the different types of jobs that you could have if you are working at the zoo. I learned a lot about just potential. Like I didn't think about how animals, you know, they're not in their natural habitat. So, you know, there's a lot of things that need to be done to really support them while they're, you know, in a zoo environment, just to stimulate them and take care of their physical features. Elephants, for example, they need a pedicure once in a while because, you know, they're not walking, you know, a ton in the zoo the way they would, you know, normally. Cuddle a Joey. I did not know what a Joey was. It's a baby kangaroo. So the Joey like spends time in a pouch. And if for some reason, you know, the mother's not around, a zoo worker might take that role of carrying around the Joey. Really, really neat. Really, really neat. Wow. The other book that's very related is What Do They Do With All That Poo? Again, another great word. this is by Jane Kurtz and it's illustrated by Allison Black. And I think, you know, this book also it's really going to appeal to kids who are interested in animals or in zoology. It goes through, you know, the various types of animals. It talks a lot about digestion, what their poop looks like, how much it weighs, you know, what types of, you know, food products don't get fully digested.
Wow.
An elephant dumps like 165 pounds of poo a day. Now, if you think about it, it's like a shoe, you know, a one, I guess you'd call it poo, would be like a shoe or a football. They're dumping 165 footballs a day. So it's really,
wow.
Those books are very popular. I'm gonna love that. About you know, digestion and waste that, you know, we all do poo. So it's one that I think kids, especially at that second, third grade level, will really enjoy reading about. The other book I'm going to just mention quickly, it's actually a Braille book, and it really caught my attention because we don't carry that many Braille books, not many at all, actually. The title I'm thinking of right now, it's called Animals, Knowledge You Can Touch. And it's actually a board book, but it's got the actual Braille underneath all the content. And I really, it stood out to me because I've, you know, recently, I have a friend who's blind, and she was really surprised to know that we had books like that. Of course, the on the Michigan.gov website, you will find services for youth and students that have low vision. But this was kind of a neat book to look through and, you know, to talk about, maybe share with a friend who is blind. I think it's always cool for kids to learn about the various ways of reading. So,
yeah,
very much.
Yeah. Really good. Well, this, we talked a little bit before the podcast about how this is a really great summer for book releases about animals, fiction, mm-hmm. adult fiction. There's some, I have a TBR pile I'm looking at from here with a bunch of really great natural science animal books. This is my personal favorite topic, so I'm pretty excited. I don't think we've had a summer reading program focusing on this. And of course, there's the folk tale and another aspect of it too, not just the animal tales. But I wanted to start out with a book that I'd waited for a long time. It actually won the Andrew Carnegie Award for Nonfiction for 2020. And that is an award given by the ALA. It was also a Kirkus Book Review nonfiction pick. And it's called Fathoms, The World and the Whale by Rebecca Giggs. And this particular book, what I really enjoy about reading this one, I've read several books about whales. It's a topic I really enjoy. But I feel like this book is revelatory in the information and the way it comes out. You know, there's just pieces of information that I didn't know, or I didn't know to this much detail, that I now, the way it's written, they'll really stick with me. To pardon the bad pun, it's a total deep dive into the topic. And it's not just a natural science book about animals. I've read a lot of those. I read a lot of those. This one's a little different because it's focusing more than some of the others on humans' interaction with whales, and not just on the level that we are changing the environment, and a lot of things we've done to change the environment are harming the ocean so much that they're having big effects on whales and other ocean life, but on the sort of psychological plane. You know, what are whales to us as humans? What have they represented for a very long time in our culture, you know, before whaling? And what does that mean? You know, what is our relationship to them? We think of them as they're sort of charismatic animals for us. People think they're spiritual animals. You know, what does that mean? What do they represent for us? And it starts out with a stranded whale on the beach and the author's home, and near the author's home in Perth, Australia. And Rebecca Giggs then goes through, and she's really impacted by this event, and then starts to look into, in particular, environmental effects of human life and activity, sound, pollution on whales, and so many facts. And I really don't want to give much away. There's so much really good stuff in here, but so much about sonar and whale sounds, about the environmental movement in the 70s, a really kind of a good, generous look at whaling and the history of whaling and all how much that impacted human culture. Of course, pollution and climate change are a really big part of this. My favorite part is really, sounds a little morbid, but it's something called Whale Falls. Talks about how whales dying, which is very sad, but a whale fall is extremely important to the ocean ecosystem. And there are organisms that exist only to decompose whales. Yeah, they exist. Yeah. And it's this intricate ecosystem from sort of a microscopic level on up, and that it's extremely important. So many creatures rely on the whale fall. So it's just really a really neat, deep look at whales and people and the history of whales and people too. My next one is a bit lighter, and it's more of, it's almost sort of a self-help art gift book, I guess you'd put together, but I really enjoyed it. And I wanted to bring it to the podcast. It's called Brave Birds: Inspiration on the Wing by Maud White. And there's a really neat piece. You can look back and see why the author made the book, but she's a paper artist. And on the back of the book, you can see this beautiful, intricate white outline of a hawk, or it might be a kestrel on the back there. And so each page is one of these paper cuts mounted on a black background, which actually isn't as impressive as they are. If you can see, you can actually look up some of her art just standing, you know, in the air with nothing behind it. It's easier to see it. But then each piece takes that bird and does a little essay, inspiring essay about, you know, what does the flamingo inspire? What does the hawk inspire? And they're from her perspective, but I thought it was really a really lovely book, really inspiring. The artwork is beautiful, but also the writing, and just one of those books you can dip in and out of and enjoy, especially if you love birds. And I feel like birds are so symbolic, again, like whales, and they're symbols for so many things. And this is sort of the author's take on that topic. So just a really, really fun one.
Cool.
Nice book. So what did you have, Jessica?
I've got, my first two are sort of one for each of the interpretations of the summer reading theme. We start with the lighter one first, and that is Nora Roberts is a cattle favorite. People have been following. She is just one of those highly prolific best-selling authors. And her newest novel will be out at the end of the month. It's called Legacy. And one of the things, what I have always liked about her writing is she does characters really well. But interestingly, as over the last, I don't read her everything by her, but I've looked into kind of some of her most recent titles, and she's bringing more animals into her books.
Yeah.
And I did read Legacy, and there are a couple of dogs who are major characters in the book. And it's just one of those things. I mean, they are not just plot devices. They have interesting personalities of their own. And it's just one of those things where it jumped out to me when I was thinking about our themes. Yeah. It is a book that sort of, the premise is that it is in the contemporary, it is about a woman who has sort of taken her mother's dreams. Her mother's a kind of runs a wellness and yoga empire. Mm-hmm. And the daughter has kind of followed in her footsteps, but kind of gone off on her own. They still do projects together. But the mother always wanted out of her small town, and the daughter wants a home and wants to be in that small town where her grandparents live. So it's and the title is Legacy, and it really deals with sort of those themes of what we push our children into, what we let them do, what, you know, what do we owe or not those that have gone ahead of us on things. And it comes back to what Nora Roberts does best, and that's character and suspense. But the main couple know each other on and off through life, but they come back together in the contemporary over a pair of dogs who immediately find love. So they are just absolutely, not that the, yes, his dog absolutely loves hers, and hers is much more reticent, but they are definitely a couple. It's just one of those, it was funny and fun. And it's just one of those good summer reads.
Nice.
Cool.
The other one is heavier, On Fragile Waves by E. Lily Yu. There's a new imprint, I think it's called Erewhon, it's sort of running the line of magic realism and science fiction fantasy. So the books are kind of going to end up either in fiction or science fiction. This one goes to that storytelling, and it's just, it's beautifully written, really enchanting, bit heartbreaking. And it's a debut that follows the story of a set of a refugee family from Afghanistan, mostly through the eyes of the two children. And you're getting their understanding of the situation as their parents are telling them stories to kind of reassure them that everything's going to be okay. So that storytelling is such a theme throughout their life. And it follows them kind of early into their mid-teens, or even later. And it's that whole idea of we're leaving in the middle of the night, we're escaping Afghanistan, and we're going to this place somewhere out there called Australia. We know nothing about it. We just know it's not Afghanistan. And it's just, it is really, really beautifully written, really well done. And I would highly suggest it, especially if anybody who's a fan of Exit West or The Book of Lost Saints by Daniel Jose Older, they just, it's not that there's really a sci-fi component to it, but there's a magical quality to it. So that storytelling part of it and the use of folklore to kind of sometimes just quiet the kids in the process of all of this is really quite, it's just really interesting the way that she uses it. Yeah. Wow. What else have you got, Maddie?
Well, I've got a couple more nonfiction books. The first is a biography. It's Joan Proctor, Dragon Doctor, The Woman Who Loved Reptiles. This is by Patricia Valdez, and it's illustrated by Felicita Sala. And this is another picture book style biography. And it got my attention because it reminded me of my 8-year-old niece who she recently moved to Florida. And she's very eager to tell me about her new home. Inside her enclosed porch, or what maybe some people in Florida call lanais, if I'm saying that right. It is not uncommon to see these little lizard things, or I'm not sure if the correct term is anole, green or brown anoles. They look like a little gecko of some type, and they can be little. I mean, kind of like our version of squirrel mice or squirrels, you know, we see them everywhere outside. Yeah. But yeah, she sees them everywhere. And anyway, Joan Proctor was a very dedicated herpetologist. She was British, and her work took place in the early 20th century. And a herpetologist, by the way, is someone who devotes themselves to studying reptiles and amphibians. You know, if it slithers on a belly, that's probably a herpetologist is going to know about this. But anyway, she was just, for the time period, she was really groundbreaking in just getting herself out there to serve in, you know, the National History Museum. She went on to the reptile, to develop like a new exhibit kind of, or a house, the reptile house at the London Zoo. Wow. And I think just the thought of, you know, a woman developing super expertise in, you know, handling animals like pythons and, you know, crocodilians and Komodo dragons. I mean, that is just like rock star status to me, and especially at that time. So it was kind of a neat biography to go through. It's a picture book. The other one I'm kind of still getting through is Nature at Night. And this is by Lisa Regan. This is, again, going to appeal to a lot of kids interested in animals who, you know, live in or near water, interested in zoology. It's a nonfiction book that has a lot of photographs, and the kind of the cool thing about it is that there are like maybe 9 photographs that have like a little star, and that's your cue to put the photograph under sunlight, or I'm sorry, under a heat source. And then you turn off the lights and you can see these animals glow. The books, they talk about, you know, bioluminescence. Sometimes it's just this stuff that is inside of animals that are caused by chemical reactions. Dinoflagellate, for example, sailors have noticed this kind of phenomenon. for ages, you know, where you on the sea, something happens and, you know, there's movement or agitation and there's this reaction that causes light. And I first read about bioluminescence really in a YA novel maybe about a year ago or so, but it was a feature in that story. And I got really curious about it. So other animals featured in the book would be like, a type of sea turtle, a lizard fish, a scorpion, very cool book. And we do have other books like it in the system. It doesn't require a flashlight or anything like that. You can just put it under a lamp and turn off the light so you can see what that looks like. So, yeah.
Awesome. So cool. By the way, krill are bioluminescent, and that is one of whales' most number one diet sources, and also something that's extremely vulnerable to pollution and sort of thing. So our books are circling around each other again.
Yeah, they do that.
thinking of legacy, actually, the title there, I do have a pick. I know that May is a month of Mother's Day, and read a lovely book last month. It's an older title and probably well known to many, but if you haven't read it, I highly recommend you pick it up. It's Mom and Me and Mom. Maya Angelou was a 2013 memoir autobiography about, in particular, Maya Angelou's life with her mother. And when she was about 3 years old, she was sent to live with her grandmother, and her brother was as well. And then she went back to live with her mother when she was a young teen. And it was really challenging because the relationship was somewhat non-existent and sort of painful at that point, to the point where she referred to her mother as Lady. That's what she called her. And what this book goes through then is the development of their relationship, you know, through her teen years and as an adult, and just the source of, sort of a complicated relationship, but one of great depth and love, and it's really a beautiful relationship. And her mother, Vivian Baxter, just this incredible woman, very, very, very unique, really driven and dedicated to her career and to women doing really unique things at that time. So just a lovely, lovely memoir, and one that I had missed back when it came out. So I was really happy to pick that up. And I enjoy bringing backlist titles to the podcast too, like this.
Sure.
A good read. Yeah. It's just, it's so challenging as librarians, and in our jobs, we really want to keep up with the new stuff, but there's so much good stuff we like to pull up as a treasure from the past too. So really glad I picked this one up, and I encourage it as a good read for May or for the summer. I had another one that again was not with our theme of the animals or the tales, but really inspirational. And it was a 2020 release, so a newer book. It's available in print and on Hoopla, and it's Gardening Your Front Yard. So we're going in another direction here, but it's projects and ideas for big and small spaces. And I start to feel like I've seen almost every garden book at Cattle. I love them. And I always, for years, I've been reading them before I was in this position. But this one is really unique, and I wanted to bring it to the podcast for that reason. It's by Tara Nolan, who wrote Raised Bed Revolution. What I love about this book is that it's something that you can read this book or just look at the pictures, look at some of the captions, and then go and do something probably this weekend out of this book, and you'll have something, a garden, you know, a small garden piece. Everything from encouraging people to use their driveways or parts of their driveways, incorporating edible plants into a landscape, putting, you know, small plants right in there with flowers and that sort of thing, using trash cans, covering up buckets with burlap to make really pretty receptacles that you could put even on a sidewalk with tomatoes in them. And she really has the reader right in the beginning rethink, what does curb appeal really mean? And is that really, how relevant is that to the world that we're living in right now? How important is that? You know, we all get to determine that, but maybe using our yards and not having a bunch of grass might be a better use for for the spaces that we have. We can produce food, we can help our environments, we can encourage pollinators, that sort of thing. So just a really fun hands-on book. A lot of really neat like DIY projects are spruced through it too. And it's really accessible. It feels like you can do this. Anybody can do this. Yeah, it's not like one of these books where you feel like, wow, that's gorgeous. I could never afford to do that, or I could never have time to do that. No, you can do this book. And so that's why I wanted to bring it today, because I thought it was just really empowering. Sure. And I feel like we all need just those little things that make us feel sort of empowered this year, because there's a lot of, you know, a loss of control in so many areas of our lives. And this is just, you could maybe grow a tomato plant this year and it makes you feel good. And if you feed yourself with it, you know, and experiment with it and have fun with that. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
So I've got two, what I would, you know, kind of classic summer reads, you know, beach adventure type things. The first one might hit you a little funny depending on how, you know, where you are, but I want to tell you before telling you about, you know, exactly what it is, that this author is being talked up by Michael Conley, Scott Turow, Karen Slaughter. These are all Cattle Suspense favorites. And this is, regardless of your political leanings, you should know that there is a new book called While Justice Sleeps. It should be in the library anytime now, by Stacey Abrams. This is a political legal thriller. It is being compared to, it's a fun, kind of over the top thriller with puzzles and cover-ups, and then judicial history is put in, it's a bit of a bio thriller. So that's sort of what's kind of behind a lot of things. You've got this brilliant young law clerk who finds herself suddenly, she, without knowing it, she's been kind of maneuvered into being the legal guardian and power of attorney for her now comatose mentor and boss, Supreme Court Justice. And when this justice has been kind of behind the scenes doing a whole bunch of stuff, he's created sort of a game to get her to hunt something down and expose it to the world. It's just an interesting, I want to know when Stacey Abrams sleeps, because I don't understand the amount of research that had to go into this, the amount of what I would take as years of really looking into different kinds of gaming, different kinds of fandoms, different kinds of, you know, the legal research, the,
wow,
it's really fascinating. And it goes pretty quick. It's just one of those, it's a good summer read. It's just a summer adventure.
How did she do it?
I don't understand. The politics is not remotely the issue within this. It's more about cover-ups and corruption, regardless of politics involved. And I think that sort of sticks, going the route of the Supreme Court justice was sort of a way of doing that. Mm-hmm. But it's getting actually really quite good reviews. It was made the library reads list this for May. And I was really pleasantly surprised.
Very cool.
The other one I don't have to say a lot about. If you've listened to the podcast for the last 2 years around this time, you will hear me say something like, there's a new Murderbot book. And guess what? there is a new Murderbot book. It's called Fugitive Telemetry by Martha Wells. And if you are at all interested in hanging out with an extremely slacker cyborg bot who no longer reports to anyone because he hacked his own system, and has free will, but it still has some loyalty to its humans. And this one is sort of it's Murderbot meets Agatha Christie. It's a locked room or space station mystery. A body is found on the first page, and a totally peaceful space station. So no doubt station security wants to talk to the murder bot because, well, suspicious. But in the end, they basically bring him in to help bring him. Excuse me. I don't want to gender him. It. They bring it in to work the case. And it's just a fun. You have to understand, Murderbot really likes his humans and hates humans and would rather be watching soap operas. That's really what it would rather be doing. Completely.
Yeah.
So it's just one. It's a fun novella in the series.
Huh. Did you refer to it as it's like a Gen X robot?
I did. Yeah. I sort of said it sort of appeals to that sort of slacker image of Gen X in
That's
a way.
That's funny.
I say that being a member of that. So no, that, and I just, it's a fun series. I wouldn't necessarily start with this one. I'd go back to All Systems Red, the first book, but it's still, it's just a, it's, and you can read this one. You just don't know the backstory of this, of Murderbot. It's fun. They're a fun series. And actually 4 of the 5 books are just novellas. There's only one full length novel at the moment. Okay. So just again, a fun summer read. All right. Does anybody want to sneak anything else in?
I do have a couple more books that I will be very,
I totally about. Believe you. You had a good list.
Well, this one really is kind of more still for summer reading. And it's kind of a challenge. It's called Coup by Kayla Knoll. I'm going to tell you right up front that it's like over 400 pages. So I'm not even sure like what kind of kid spends that much time reading a 400 page book, but I'm sure there are some out there. This is a really quirky book. It took me a while to get it, but Coo is actually a girl, not a pigeon. I thought Coo was a pigeon when I first started reading the book, but eventually it occurred to me, I'm like, oh, Coo is actually the infant that was found in New York, and a, you know, group of pigeons picked her up and brought her up to a roof, and she's basically been living her life with the pigeons.
Oh.
So yes, not exactly realistic story, but a really neat. I mean, if you have a reader who kind of likes that whole Erin Hunter warrior series, this is the one for you, because it's kind of an adventure in that Ku has to figure out how to join the real world. She's living, I mean, her family are the pigeons. And she is, you know, after something causes her to leave the roof to help one of the pigeons that is ill. It's just kind of an adventure story in some ways, but I really thought it was very quirky because they use this very strange, like, language, you know, never fly her. Look, no wings, no feathers, not a bird, flying. Humans, never, kick pigeons, them, out, watch, out, all, kick, who. They don't speak in, you know, complete sentences. So I thought it was a really interesting story from the perspective of, you know, it's an animal story where a little girl is, you know, trying to figure out how to get into the human world as opposed to the pigeon world. So I want to mention, because I've been wanting to read it for a long time and I finally got to it in the last week, is From the Desk of Zoe Washington. This is by Janae Marks. And it was also a 2021 Edgar Award nominee for Best Juvenile Literature. And the Edgar Awards are, they're like, what are they?
They're the Mystery Awards
of America. They're you know, announced every spring. So this is about a kid who is living in Boston, which is a setting I don't get to read about very often. And I just love the story. It is realistic fiction, which is something I really enjoy, both adult fiction and kids. And it's about a kid whose father is in prison, and she doesn't know him. And come to find out, he has been unjustly convicted. She learns about, I think it's called the Innocence Project.
Yep.
And she ends up, you know, trying to build a relationship with him. And it doesn't really start out as a mystery, but, you know, with each chapter, you realize that she is on a quest to figure something out that may help him to get out of prison. And there's also, you know, lots of great characters with a grandma, and there's a baking subplot, and it's kind of a neat, you know, kind of late elementary school to middle grade novel that I think, you know, tackles some tough issues, you know, regarding our judicial system, trying to get to know a parent that you've been estranged from. So I loved it, loved it, loved it. That's all I have.
All right. It's been lovely talking to you and adding to my list of things to read.
Yes, as always.
We hope that works for all of you as well.
Yes. Everyone have a happy weekend and a happy spring with the warmer weather today.
All righty. Until next month, and we'll have those titles and links we talked about in the show notes. Thank y'all.
Explore a menagerie of stories with Capital Area District Library's Tales and Tales Summer Reading Challenge. Cattle is wagging their tails for you this summer. Read and do fun activities in this animal-themed challenge, earning prizes as you go. Sign up now by creating an account at cadl.org/summer. You'll even be automatically entered to win tickets to Jurassic Quest Drive-Thru Experience. Sponsored by Michigan State University Federal Credit Union, CATA, and 99.1 WFMK.